Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true-transparency-pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
And a fun hour headed your way right now on 104.5 The Zone with Blake Bedingfield. Blake, give the background for those that are maybe new to the city and don't know exactly how long you were with the Titans organization, because it's quite the resume.
I started in January of 1999 as a scouting assistant, and I went through 19 different drafts with the Titans, finished up a couple years ago, and enjoyed that time, rose from a scouting assistant to an area scout, also did a lot of pro scouting, advanced scouting on the pro side, and then became the director of college scouting with the Titans to the end.
How many drafts was that?
That was 19 drafts.
But not a bad look. What do you think kind of the state of the franchise right now as you look at it? People are in town anyway, really up on this team, really up on this roster. A lot of people think it's one of the better rosters in the league. I think it's pretty good. I don't know if it's one of the better rosters in the league. How do you view it?
Well, with any team you're going to start, you're going to look at the quarterback. And they have a quarterback that's starting to get into the prime of his career. Now, you've had multiple changes, from head coaching changes to offense coordinator changes, quarterback coach changes, and that's happened again this year. So he's going to have a little bit of a growing period that he's going to have to learn this offense, learn the things that his coach wants. But when you start with a quarterback, you have to look at, do we have a franchise-type quarterback? A franchise quarterback in the NFL is someone who can win without big talent around him. Marcus is a franchise-type quarterback. Marcus is a Super Bowl-type quarterback. And that's where you have to start with this team. He's in that prime of his career. It's time for him to win. In 2 years from now, he's going to get paid like it. And now is the time to reap those benefits at his age and his development.
It was pretty clear pretty early in that draft that Tampa Bay was taking Winston. So Titans' decision was pretty much made for you. Were you guys happy that they decided what they did? We're looking at the Jameis Winston news now, and everybody in town's thinking, oh, dear God, I mean, their stats are roughly equal, and there's no chance of the guy in this town winding up in the situations that Jameis Winston's landing in now. Could he have been a Titan had the Bucs gone the other way?
He could have. I think what happened, we all, and I'm talking about the personnel department, the coaching staff, had decided on Marcus pretty early. It was an easy decision from our organization to sit at number two and look and say, if Marcus is our guy, do we take him? Yes. It was everything from the play on the field in the fall to the meetings we've had at Oregon, the workouts, and then the once he came to the facility and spent time in Nashville, it was just a no-brainer.
You know, I've heard this since everything happened with Jameis Winston from a lot of people. They just kind of flippantly throw it out there that, hey, any team in the National Football League was going to take Jameis Winston that needed a quarterback over Marcus Mariota. Do you think that's true? What was it? I mean, I'm assuming it was a higher percentage of people who probably thought better of Jameis Winston over Marcus Mariota, but was it that much of a no-brainer that Jameis Winston was one and Marcus Mariota was two in terms of quarterbacks that year?
I didn't think so. Not in my own personal opinion, no. I would have taken Marcus over Jameis in that draft. And that's not just because of the news that has come out and the way Marcus has played. Jameis has played well at times, and that's what he did at Florida State. Jameis was and is a good starting quarterback in this league. Is he a franchise guy? Right now he's got a really good receiver that he throws to on a consistent basis in Mike Evans. They haven't built the talent around him that has continued to help him out, and that's why they've had some struggles. But, you know, Marcus was the type of guy that I thought, and our staff thought, that he was – the type of player that could come right in, take over the quarterback position, learn it from a mental standpoint with a new coaching staff, with everything that was put in place. He was an easy choice at that time.
Blake, a lot of the storyline this offseason has been what he's been working on his own. The base needs to be wider. He's trying to get his feet right. And I was thinking, when Paul and I were discussing this a day when Chad was out, shouldn't that be something that's already ready to go and worked on at this point in his career? Or am I overlooking a key area of development for a quarterback, that this is very normal for something and a player going into year four?
you know, at this point, it should be a small tweak. And yeah. you're always trying to get better at your craft, whether it's a footwork or an arm placement or the way you shift your hips when you throw the ball or the way you rotate in after releasing the ball. There's always different things to work on. Marcus has had so many coaches since he's been here, coming from a system in Oregon where he was in the shotgun the majority of the time, where he was a quick game passing type offense. He had to come to the NFL where he was under center. He had to learn that type of a thing, and part of his development was taking a snap, not just opening up his front feet and hips to throw the ball. That's why you saw a lot of the balls to his right, deep outside routes would float on him a little bit. He just wasn't getting his feet around, wasn't getting his hips around, and those were things that Marcus is going to work on. Now, one thing with Marcus, you can rest assured, he's going to do what he's asked to do. If he has a coach that tells him to work on his footwork, he's going to do that. He's a company guy. He's a worker. He's a pleaser in that regard. You know, he also has an opinion on what would work best for him, but he's also going to do what the coaches ask.
Let's stick with that for a second. I'll go back to something else. He's a pleaser. We've had this conversation a lot. We've had it with him about how assertive he will be, and that at this stage of his career, you want a guy to be a stakeholder. You want him to take ownership. We know he didn't have the personality he was going to go in and rip up a page of the playbook. But knowing him as you do, and he said now, you know, I asked him during this. He said, this isn't the time for me. We're installing a new offense. I don't even know it all yet. How could I say, you know, let's get rid of this? But assures us that in due time, he won't hesitate to do that. Do you buy it, and can he do it the right way where he takes that ownership?
No question. You know, at this stage of his career, going into his fourth year, he should be with one coach, one offense coordinator, one quarterback coach, and he should be adding things. Now he's having to start with a new coach again. Those are the unfortunate things that he's having to deal with in his career, is constant turnover. But, you know, he will pick up the system really quick. He is very smart mentally. He's going to engross himself into that offense. He's going to be sitting with a quarterback coach and the offense coordinator on a daily basis. There's no question about that. His work ethic is unquestioned.
Blake Bedingfield is with us, the former director of college scouting for the Tennessee Titans on 104.5 The Zone.
You mentioned Tampa Bay not really having given Winston much outside of Evans. How do you feel this franchise has done at giving Marcus enough?
You know, I think when you look at some of the pieces that Marcus would help make Marcus successful, Delanie Walker is that obvious piece. It's a sure, good route runner in the right spot, good hands, third down, chain mover. That's really what Marcus likes. He also would probably benefit from someone that could throw a little bubble screens, little short screens, short passes, get the fast, quick passing game more.
Deion Lewis going to be that?
Deion Lewis will be a nice asset to him out of the backfield. DeMarco was a good asset to him out of the backfield. DeMarco had very good hands, was a good route runner. He was very good making plays after the catch. Deion's going to be that same kind of player. I don't think he's going to be much different. He's maybe a little quicker, not as big, not as strong, but a little quicker. But he's going to be a nice asset, as DeMarco was.
How about the receivers?
You know, that's the question mark. You know, Rishard Matthews has been a very consistent player for them. That's why he catches a number of balls under Marcus. He's in the right spot when he needs to be. He's not going to make a lot of plays after the catch, downfield, that type of thing. But he's gonna move the chains at times. He's gonna run the right routes. He's gonna catch the ball when it's thrown to him. You know, when you have those other receivers, Tajay Sharpe was a player that ran good routes, very good hands. He just lacks strength and lacks top-end speed. And, you know, he is kind of what he is. He's a solid NFL third, fourth receiver on a good team, and that's what he'll be. When you look at the two young guys and Corey Davis, Corey had flashes later in the year. In other parts of the year, he disappeared. He was a guy that wasn't in the right spot, didn't look like he ran the right routes, inconsistent from that standpoint. Maybe you attribute some of that to the injury in OTAs. Then you have Tywan Taylor. Tywan is a quicker, more quicker than fast type player. He does have good speed, could stretch the field with that speed. But, you know, he's a player that even at Western Kentucky was not as consistent of a route runner, that type of thing. Now, he does have good hands. He is a good athlete. He's a little bit like Kendall Wright. And when Kendall Wright played here, Kendall Wright had games where he caught a lot of balls and was productive. Then other games, he wasn't doing the right thing in the offense, and he kind of disappeared.
Can he be the guy to take the top off here to threaten at least? They need somebody to threaten in this offense. It doesn't necessarily have to be running under deep stuff all the time, but needs to get the safety to commit, right?
I think what you'll see is what happened last year. He got deep on a couple of patterns, but that was because he came in the game, and you know, one of maybe 17, 18 reps in a game. If he's on the field on a consistent basis, he's probably going to have less of those opportunities. They're going to know he's in that game for that purpose. He's not just a blazer. He's not just a burner that's going to open the top, take the safeties away, and work underneath.
That's missing here, right?
That is missing.
Well, and Corey Davis, he had a few big catches where he went up and got it. But you mentioned, you know, not always being in the right spot. We didn't see a ton of him because of injury. Do you see him as a guy who can be a really good route runner that just looked confused at times that maybe can learn it in year two? Or is route running an issue for him?
Well, I think in year two, he's back to year one. He's got a new system again, so he's almost a rookie all over again. He had to learn a system last year. He's going to learn a system this year. Now, he has a little bit more time to integrate himself into this offense, where last year he was a rookie, all the things that came with a rookie, the offseason workouts, just being mentally and physically exhausted, walking into OTAs, rookie camp, that type of thing. This year, he's going to have a little bit, it's going to be a little bit easier process to take this offense. Now, Buddy's learning again. He's learning with the quarterback and the other receivers. There's no one that they've brought in right now that really knows this offense to help teach him outside the coaches. So there is that little bit of a worry that there's going to take some time with him. But does he have that ability? Yes, that's what he did in college. He was a short intermediate route runner that took the ball and could run after the catch. He's big and strong and has good enough speed.
Derrick Henry, the selection last year. And Blake, I'd like to get your thoughts on the decision to go Henry, two drafts ago. And after bringing in DeMarco Murray, that was the first time, and I was sitting across from Mike Keith in this studio whenever the pick was made. My jaw hit the floor because I'm thinking, you trade for DeMarco Murray, you have some pieces in place at running back. I wasn't expecting Henry to be a part of the mix. Now, moving forward, how does he fit with the current plan? And what was the decision at the time in selecting him to this roster with the depth that you guys had?
You know, at the time, it was DeMarco was just traded for, so he was going to be the starting running back. The backup running backs were Bishop Sankey, Blue Allen, there were some Antonio Andrews. Mm-hmm. There really wasn't that designated number two that could potentially be a one. DeMarco had a number of carries in his career. He was getting to that 30-year mark, which is a pivotal age for a running back, and you needed that next guy. And one of the things with the system at the time under Mike Mularkey was downhill physical run team. Mm-hmm. That's what we're going to be. And if you're going to be a downhill physical run team, you're going to need a physical running back. You've got DeMarco, who can do a number of things. He can catch the ball out of the backfield, run in between the tackles. Now you bring in another guy like a Derrick Henry that can actually get outside with his speed, but also run in between the tackles. And actually, coming into from college football, he was actually not bad at pass protection. That is something that he's had to continue to work on now in the NFL, but it was something he was very good on at Alabama.
It amounted to identity insurance.
No question.
Kind of, right?
Yeah, if you lose DeMarco, you lost your identity on offense, and you needed to have that second player, that second running back that can carry the load. And Derrick had been the type of player at Alabama that is split time. He was used to splitting time in Alabama system, and he's also used to carrying the load in certain games. When they knew he was the guy, he could carry the ball 40, 41, 42 times, which will never happen in the NFL now, but he's done it on the college level.
Well, he's such a physical specimen, and I'm so interested in these Alabama running backs because they always seem to have two or three that have NFL talent, but they, like you said, they have to split time, and they're not asked to do everything. You know, we always heard this about Derrick Henry. Well, he caught like four passes his entire time at Alabama, so he can't do it. He can't catch passes. When you look at a guy like that and you start to envision what you're going to ask him to do based on what you've seen, did you see more in Derrick Henry that he could possibly do at the next level? Or do you draft a Derrick Henry? And this is kind of just a theoretical question. If you see someone do something a lot in college, are you drafting them based on what you think they can do outside of that in the NFL and also knowing what they did in college? Or do you draft Derrick Henry just because he's really good at what he does at Alabama, and he can be really good at doing that with the Titans?
You know, I think track record is a great predictor of what's going to happen in the future. But when you're talking about a team like Alabama, whether it was the LSUs, the Clemsons now, or the Miamis back in the early 2000s, but the Alabama now, you have a lot of talent on that roster. So you're going to see, why does Derrick Henry not catch the ball? Why is he not in the game on passing situations? Well, maybe it's because they had a TJ Yeldon that had really good hands, and that was really his strength on the team at the time, and Derek was coming off the field in those situations. So, you know, when you have a player that doesn't do something, you're going to have to find out why. And that's what a scout's job is. It's take him out, work him out. Does he have the hands? When you're doing the research with the position coaches and the coordinators at that school, can he learn it? Was it something that he didn't learn well enough? And if all those questions are asked, then you go ahead and draft the guy and say he can do it on our level because we've seen the hands. We know he can learn. And we obviously see the running ability in between the tackles and on the outside.
That was kind of Mariota in the pocket, right? I mean, as hard as I may have been on Rustin Webster and Ken Wisenhunt, you guys collectively said it's not that he can't play from the pocket, it's that he wasn't asked to play from the pocket.
There's no question. That's the system they ran at Oregon, and that's what he did, and that's the type of quarterback he is. But could he make that change, which we found out pretty quickly he could? And was he willing to work at it, which we found out pretty quickly he would?
Like, I'm approaching this from a very surface-level, broad view here, but draft number one, meat and potatoes. Draft number two, skill positions. And if I were describing
a Robinson draft,
if I were describing the third draft with John Robinson most recently, plug and play type players with biggest needs in mind. Am I around the ballpark of describing those drafts, or am I way off base on how I have viewed the first three seasons with Robinson?
No, I think you're pretty much right on. And each draft is so different to itself, so you have to look at what the draft is made up of, where your choices are. First draft just happened to be with the first pick in the draft, traded down. Then you acquired the three number twos. You had to see what the strength in the draft was in that, at that time, the 13th pick and the three twos. And you had to see what you were going to get. What were the talent? You had to be able to strategically plan the first pick and those three number two picks. So, you know, these other drafts was a little bit different. Last year, you had the two number ones, and you knew you were probably going to go receiver and corner. It's just which order. Were you going to take the corner early at number five, a Marshawn Lattimore, that type of player, and then take a receiver later or flip it? Well, the decision was made to take the receiver than the corner. Just happened to be a little bit more depth at the corner position where maybe one would be there at 21. This past year, definite needed inside linebacker and outside linebacker. You have two contracts coming up on the outside and a older veteran on the inside and the outside, and the number two pick from the first year not panning out at this point in Kevin Dodd. So you had to make those choices at that point. So a lot of need-based picks in all three drafts, but also looking at the draft and see what it's available.
You mentioned Dodd. What was the thinking on Dodd when Dodd was the choice, and what do you think about his last remaining chance, it appears, here, where he stayed away for part of the offseason? He's got a new coach, played his position, clean slate stuff. If he ever was going to take off, now would be the time, but we haven't seen anything to suggest he's going to do it.
You know, this is a pivotal point in his career. This is his third year in the league, this is coming up on his third year in the league. This is time to start to be a NFL kind of player. And when you're a second round pick, really top of the second round, late part of the first, it's time to produce. It was time to produce a year ago. It was time to produce 2 years ago in some kind of fashion. You know, the injury did not help him early on, gaining weight, that type of thing is rookie year. Second year, not being involved, not being a part of it. He's showing a steady decline instead of an incline as a player. You know, this is a guy that either is going to have to prove himself on the field this year, or he's going to get cut and be a minimum salary player until he can prove it again. This is time for Kevin Dodd to step up and do it. You know, at that time, looking for a pass rusher, Derek Morgan was in his seventh year at the time. Arakpo was in his eighth. You know, it's time to find that next guy. You know, he was a one-year producer at Clemson, but you had to look at it and say, why didn't he produce? Well, they've always had defensive ends that have gone on to the NFL, the Beasleys, and, you know, there's been a ton of them. So, you know, did he just play behind those guys? When he finally got his opportunity, he was productive.
Which you could say for a lot of Alabama players, for instance, right?
No question. When you start to look at certain colleges, there's so much talent at some of these schools now. Clemson's one of them, Alabama, obviously. But there are so many players at those. Some players have to wait their time.
Rashawn Evans, at Alabama, they wanted a reason to get him on the field. That's why he rushed off the edge in early seasons, because they wanted to use him, despite even though they had their depth at inside linebacker. When you watched him play over the years, Blake, what jumped out to you about Evans in college? And is he the perfect fit for the type of defense the Titans now want to run and run through him as the voice of the defense?
You know, the first thing I wondered about Rashawn was, why wasn't he on the field more early in his career? You know, you had the Reuben Fosters and the Sean Dion Hamiltons. You had some players that played ahead of him, but the question is why? And if you're a good scout or if you're a good GM, you're going to ask that question, why? Is it, can he not learn the system? Is he struggling learning? Does he do one thing particularly well now and we're going to teach him something later? He played a lot on the outside as a pass rusher. Now, when you watch him rush from the outside, he wasn't their starting outside linebacker, but he was a player that had natural bend around the edge. Rushing the passer is not a difficult position to learn. Now, when you go to the inside in a system like Alabama, there's two positions that are very difficult, the inside backer and the safety. That so much is put on both of those positions mentally that you have to have someone be able to line up some of these other players. Sean Dion Hamilton was that player at Alabama, 5'11", 230 pounds, multiple knee injuries. He played above a lot of players. Reuben Foster did not start until his last year at Alabama, which was a junior year. But there's a reason why these guys aren't starting, and some of it's a learning issue. Now, when you put your hand down and rush a pass, there's not as much to learn from that standpoint. So that's where he was really effective early in his career. This past year, they moved him to inside backer, and he was able to play alongside Sean Dion until he got hurt. Sean's not the kind of athlete. He was drafted later in the draft by the Redskins, but not quite the athlete of those other two I mentioned.
Process question for you as a scout. Do you have certain guys on each of these staffs that you can go to and feel like you can get an honest assessment? When, let's say we're talking about Clemson, Alabama, these schools that have so many great players. If you went and got an assessment on, okay, why did Rashawn Evans not play early on, does every scout have a certain guy they can go to they feel like they're getting the real scoop on someone?
No question. When I first started in the league, I was 27 years old. I did not have that group of people to go to. I had to build that rapport with the coaches in college.
That's the job, pretty much, right?
It doesn't matter if they're an assistant coach, the coordinator, the head coach, maybe a GA that's going to eventually be a position coach or a coordinator or head coach is going to help you. That's the type of relationships you build, not only on the coaching staff, but you build those with the equipment managers, the trainers, strength and conditioning, the secretaries. No telling who can give you information about a player, maybe off the field, maybe mentally, maybe physically. You know, you want to build up a great resource at every college. So, yes, it's very important. When I first started, I was 27. The majority of scouts at that time were in their 50s and 60s. They were old coaches. They knew the other coaches on the staffs, and they had great background. You know, the league has changed tremendously over the past 5 years, where you have a lot of 20-something scouts. Now, year-old scouts, they've got to go and build that relationships again.
What'd you do? What were some of your tricks of the trade? I mean, we know people bring donuts or you send flowers to the secretary. What kind of stuff? How do you get somebody to trust you?
You know, part of it was just being around. And what I did was, is I made sure that when I was around, I went up and talked to everyone. There's a number of coaches that would blow you off and not really want to give you information, and that was okay. There were certain head coaches that didn't allow it. Joe Paterno was one of them. But did you need to find an inn at Penn State? Yes, you did. And I found around the way an inn at Penn State and just happened to be a graduate assistant that became a position coach that stayed there a long time because the head coach stayed there a long time. You had to befriend them. Maybe I took him out to lunch outside of the building to get him away from the head coach where I could do that. And that happens a lot in the NFL scouting realm where you have to go out the night before maybe for dinner or take them out to lunch. Not only that, but you better bring the secretary her favorite croissant or coffee, and you better bring the equipment guys stuff too because they're going to want some gear and that type of thing. So that's always important.
Blake, going back to Rashawn Evans for a moment, as the defensive leader, the guy who's delivering the play and getting the defense set up, can he be that guy? Did you see that in college from him at all?
I don't think he's going to be that guy. I think Wesley Woodard will be that guy this year, and Rashawn will be a player that kind of learns off of Wesley. And that's a good situation to be in.
You graduate to it later?
No question. I think he can. Stay in the same system. Don't start changing systems on the guy, and don't start mixing things up. But right now, no, it's not going to be a thing for him. Now, in the NFL, there's not that excuse to say he can't learn. You've got enough time to teach him or put him in the right spot for where he can learn enough. You know, we had a player here, Zach Brown, a few years ago, outstanding athlete. You put a lot on him mentally, it wasn't going to come out well. And so what happened is you just have to let him go play. Well, we put a lot on him mentally, and he made some mental mistakes. And then when we let him play, he just became a player. Washington did that, Buffalo did that, and he's made the Pro Bowl. That kind of thing, that knowing your players, knowing their strengths, knowing their weaknesses. One of Rashawn's strengths is he's very athletic. He's very fast. He's rangy. He's an instinctive player. He can rush from the inside and the out. You know, there's a lot of good qualities to him. Don't tax his brain with having to line everybody up on this defense from day one. You've got veteran guys around him that can do that. You've got a safety in Kevin Byard that can do that. And you've got another inside backer that's going to stand next to him in Wesley Woodard. You know, they're going to already put him in a situation probably where he's going to have to play a lot of nickel and play the base defense. So that's a lot mentally and physically to handle at this point.
The decision to go with Landry was an easy one in the second round because a lot of people had him as a first-round pick for the Tennessee Titans in mock drafts. And it's an obvious lineup there because of the need for that edge rusher. What does Landry bring off the edge from what you've watched from him in college? And can he be a guy who has an instant impact from a week one perspective? Because they've got to have that this year.
Yes, I think he can. I think Harold is going to bring something that the Titans don't have right now, and that's speed off the edge. Derek Morgan is more of a power rusher that works technique and inside-outside moves. Arakpo's a little bit of that now in his career. You're talking about his 10th year. He's more of a power rusher, can get the edge at times, and has enough strength to finish the play. But Harold's going to be that fast, quick, outside rusher that they haven't had in a while. So, you know, can he be a game one impact player? Yeah, he won't be a starter, but he'll be a guy that plays enough snaps in that defense to make an impact. The thing that Harold's going to have to learn is he can't just rely on the outside rush. If he's coming from the right side against a NFL left tackle, that's only going to win a few times. He's going to have that counter move, that inside-outside move. He's going to have to continue to develop a power rush game that he's got to go to at times to get these guys off balance. You know, when you're talking about a Taylor Lewan-type left tackle, not everybody has one, he's going to get that work in practice every day, and Taylor's going to work him to death. And he's going to have to learn to adjust from just an outside speed rush.
You mentioned, so let's stick with defense. Dean Pease, different than Dick LeBeau. We know they had great success in Houston, and we expect them to be able to do a lot of that five-man front where offensive lines have to declare. I know Pease has traditionally had big guys up front. The Titans aren't gigantic up front. How do you picture the personnel that exists? What's Dean Pease going to do with this, and how will this defense look different than what we've gotten used to with LeBeau?
You know, I think the Dean Pease defense, when you look at a Brandon Williams at nose tackle, a space move, he's just going to create and take up space. That allows that C.J. Mosley to run free and make plays. See, C.J. Mosley's not much different than Rashawn Evans from a athletic standpoint. Now, but the problem is the nose that the Titans have is not a Brandon Williams space eater. When you look at some of the players, the Chris Canties, you know, some of these guys, the Haloti Natas, those are different kind of players, different kind of size guys that the Titans have. You know, Daquan Jones was re-upped and signed to a long-term contract. He's a very good run-down, five-technique, two-gap type player. He can fit that one of those roles. You know, Austin Johnson's probably going to move nose tackle back to the five-technique. And Jarrell Casey's something that Pease has never had, an undersized three technique that's playing in a 3-4 defense. But every coordinator would want a Jarrell Casey type player, Jarrell Casey type individual and player. So that's going to be a benefit to him that he hasn't had before. Now, it's going to put a little bit more stress on those inside backers because Jarrell's not a take up double team type of guy. He is in passing situations, but not run. The no tackle is not going to be a double team automatic every situation. So those inside backers are going to have to be able to get off blocks. And they're going to take up a little bit more than they have in the past.
Blake, if I said name the top five talented players for the Titans, would you start with Mariota and Lewan? Should I say let's not discuss them in this list because they're so obvious?
Yeah, I think Taylor Lewan is the best athlete on the team. He's the best player on the team. At this point, I think he's one of the best, if not the best, left tackle in the league. He's going to get paid like that in a year from now. He is going to be the highest paid offensive lineman in the game. So different than Nate Solder, who holds that title now. Nate's a 29-year-old guy. He's kind of at the end of his, he can play 3 or 4 more years, but Taylor's in the prime of his career, 25, 26. He's going to get paid like the best player.
And Mariota will eventually be the highest paid player in the league whenever he signs that contract. The next quarterback in line is always that guy.
No question.
But after those two, like who immediately comes to mind as the most talented,
you know, on this roster? I cannot discount Jarrell Casey. I think Jarrell is a year-in, year-out producer. And what I mean is he may be a 10-sack-a-year guy 1 year, but he may be a 7, sack a year guy the next, but he's creating plays for other people, whether it's Arakpo or Morgan or whoever's in that system. But Jarrell Casey's the third best player on the team. I would go Kevin Byard number four. I think Kevin's really turned into a top level safety in the league. He is a ball hawk. He's always been that player. But what he's really done is clean up his run game. He was a guy that took bad angles in Middle Tennessee and in the run game at times. He was always playing the middle of the field, picking balls off, doing that type of thing. But he was a guy that took some bad run angles. He cleaned that up in year two really, really well. And he's just one of the top safeties in the league right now. So, you know, if you look at those top four, and I have to put Delaney.
Pick a fifth.
I put Delaney in at number five just because of the consistency day in, day out. We're not talking about top overall athlete. We're talking about top overall players. Delaney would be my number five.
You bring up Delaney. I immediately think of tight ends moving forward on this roster. We'll get into that coming up, especially with Jonnu Smith.
So you if I force you there, is quarterback one or is it quarterback two?
I think quarterback's number two to Lawan. I think Lawan's an elite level player at this point.
So let's start little and go big with Bud Adams. You talk about like needing to have stuff to give, equipment guys and stuff around the league. We've always heard about the FedEx bills that got critiqued from Houston. But how did that work for you? Like, were there constraints that maybe some of your compadres around the league didn't have, or was it easy for you to get a duffel bag full of stuff to take on the road?
You know, we always had to go through. Mr. Adams was always in Houston. That's where he worked out of, so he was very rarely in Nashville. So we always had to persuade our equipment guy, Haas, Paul Noska, to give us stuff to take on the road. When I first came to the Titans, it was very tough. And we had an older group of scouts at that point. Like I said, I was 27. I think the next youngest was 53 and go from there, 60s, 70s. And they always wanted gear to take on the road. That was very big to take T-shirts or hats to secretaries, equipment guys. And Haas was very stingy with those kind of items. So we finally were able to work it out. I said, look, I'll work with the scouts and you just give me the equipment and I'll give it up to them, because they would call him too much. And Paul and Haas, they got tired of it. So I started working as a liaison between the equipment guys and the scouts, and I was able to get them gear and made everybody happy at that point. But no, he did not interfere with that type of stuff. Now, the stuff that we were given to give out to the schools was really what the players didn't use. It wasn't new stuff that was bought for us. It was just the old stuff.
Nobody knows that on the road, right?
Even when we went to Nike, we were still giving out all the Reebok stuff. Logo Athletic.
The Puma gear.
It's like the Super Bowl champion gear that's sent to Haiti. You know, the team that didn't win. That's basically the equipment we're talking about.
So, word is that you once had in your khakis or your jeans on a casual Friday, you had a great interaction with Mr. Adams when he was in Nashville. What can you recount to us about that story?
So I did. It was my first year with the Titans. It was 1999, and I was a new employee. I was there probably at that point 6-7 months. I was just trying to keep my head down, do my job, stay out of everybody's way, not getting, you know, we had a nice successful season that year, went on to the Super Bowl, but, you know, just keep my head down, do my job, and make an impression that way. Well, Mr. Adams, like I said, didn't really come to Nashville very often, and the people that had been in the office for a long time knew when he was coming in, and usually either pass it around, you know, at the water cooler in the kitchen. Hey, Mr. Adams is coming in tomorrow. Be prepared. Everybody was prepared. Everybody was prepared to dress well, do that. Well, nobody told the new guy. So I'm sitting in my office at 7 o'clock in the morning on a Friday, and Friday in Nashville with the Titans at the time was casual Friday. So it was jeans, golf shirt, you know, that type of thing. The rest of the week you had to dress up, but that day you had the casual Friday. So I'm in my jeans and golf shirt, and everybody's walking in with a dress for the ladies or pantsuit or a suit for the men. And I'm thinking either it's a team photo that I'm not going to be in, probably, that I didn't get the email. And somebody walked in my office that had been there a long time and said, hey, why did you not dress up today? And I said, well, I didn't get the memo. What's going on? Well, Mr. Adams is here. And where my office was located, Mr. Adams was probably 30 yards toward the bathroom.
He's in the office. If you've been out to practice, there's a little balcony that comes out off the top of the building facing the field, and that's Bud's office at the time.
So I was told to stay in my office from this employee until Mr. Adams left for the day. That could be 3 hours. It could be 6 hours. Could be all day. So I decided to do that. I closed my door, stayed in my office. But at some point, Mr. Adams' office and my office, Mr. Adams' office was halfway between my office and the restroom. Well, after 3 or 4 hours of sitting in my office, I needed to sneak out for a moment. And even though everyone told me to stay, I decided to sneak out and take the chance. Couldn't wait any longer. Went to the restroom. I snuck by the office. Mr. Adams did not look like he was in there. Maybe he was gone for the day. I walk in the restroom, and Mr. Adams is in the restroom. And I'm thinking, maybe he's not going to recognize me. I'm new. He probably doesn't even know who I am. I do my business, get out. I'm starting to walk out of the restroom, and he says, "Hey, young man." And I said, "Yes, sir." And I said, "I'm Blake Bedingfield." And he said, "Oh, I know exactly who you were." Not quite sure he did. Maybe he did. But again, I was a new employee at the time. And he looked at me and he said, "I see you're dressed very casually today." And I said, "Oh my goodness, here we go. Yes, sir, I am. I am dressed casually." But in Nashville, we have a casual dress policy on Friday. And he said, "Yes, I do know that." And he said, "We actually have that same policy in Houston." I said, "Well, that's good." He said, "But I noticed everyone else is dressed in their suits and dresses today." And I said, "Yes, sir, I noticed that as well." He said, "Eh, they're just a bunch of kiss butts anyway." He said, "Good to meet you, young man." And I walked on my way.
You had to feel pretty vindicated there.
Yes, I did. It was actually a good time to meet him, and I was so glad it was over.
What a relief. Yeah.
I can imagine, though, the face getting red as he's saying, I see that that's you're not dressed up today. I see you're dressed very casual.
So do you think, now looking back on it, that someone put him up to saying that to you? Like that he was in on it, or do you think that was just off the cuff, his reaction?
I think that was off the cuff. Okay. I don't think people put Mr. Adams up to doing much, especially in a joking manner. Now,
okay.
I'll say this. He was always very nice to me. He and his family were very nice to me. He was the type of guy that would love to sit and tell stories, not just about football, but if you ever ask him about the old Oiler days, you may be there an hour sitting there talking to him at lunch. He was he had a great memory of every player and every situation. And me being just a football junkie, he was a guy that you could really sit and learn a lot from, but always very nice to me and my family. And, you know, it was nice to meet him, not really in the bathroom. I would probably prefer somewhere else, but it was nice to meet him for the first time.
Blake Bedingfield in studio with us. I mentioned the tight end position a bit earlier. We discussed Delanie Walker and what he means to this roster. But moving forward, big picture, you know, they drafted Kevin Dodd, as you pointed out, because of the age for the outside linebackers and looking towards the future for what they might need. Is Jonnu Smith in the perfect spot to be the next go-to tight end on this roster, or they need much more than that?
You know, that's one of the reasons you draft that at that point. I mean, Delanie's on the wrong side of 30. He's still playing at a Pro Bowl level. He's still a good player, but at some point he's going to hit the wall. When is that wall? Is it this year? Is it next year?
How sudden is that for a scout to notice?
It happens pretty quick. You can see it, whether it's a running back, especially skill positions, you see it pretty quick. Offensive lineman, it shows up. You see a lack of strength, maybe on the ground a little bit more than they're used to. Linebackers just can't run with running backs anymore in pass coverage. It happens. There's certain little things you see in an OTA setting. You don't notice it as much because you're kind of saying, well, maybe he's not in great shape. Once training camp hits, it shows up really quick. You know, Delanie's the type of player that even though he's a short kind of intermediate route runner, there's going to be a point where he's not going to get off the line of scrimmage as quickly. He's not going to get into his route as quickly. He's going to get covered up more. And he's going to be somebody the quarterback looks away from because he's covered up. You know, he's not at that point yet, but that's going to happen at that position. You know, you see that with a lot of guys hitting their in their early 30s.
That GM's probably go to bed at night praying for those things. Please let this guy be a guy that doesn't see that for 4 years.
But then you always protect yourself with a draft choice like a Jonnu Smith. You go back to him being drafted in the third round, and that's why he's there. He's there as a supplement to Delanie. But now he's there as a learning from and has a similar skill set. So he needs to take that next jump in the second year.
We haven't talked to you about Malcolm Butler, who I'm very curious about. They obviously, I don't know if they know the answer to the Super Bowl question. If John got it from Bill Belichick, probably wouldn't helping him out, taking one of his free agents away. But huge money to a guy that there's some mystery to, who I see as a very good player, but I tend to want in a guy you pay a ton of money for some like huge singular skill, world-class speed or unbelievable ball skill. Does Malcolm Butler have a quality like that, or is he just a very good cornerback?
I think his probably one of his best qualities is his competitiveness. He's a competitor. And does he have great size? No. Does he have great speed? No. Is he a solid cover guy? Yeah, he is. You know, when you're going to pay a guy that kind of money, you're looking at the Jalen Ramsey's type. You're looking at the tall and long and athletic and really can cover any receiver you go against. And I'm talking about small to big. And, you know, Malcolm's a good, solid player. He's paid like a top-level player. You know, Logan Ryan was paid like that last year, $10 million a year. You know, but in today's NFL, you better have three corners that can play. And, you know, even with LeSean Sims being a fourth, that's pretty good depth at that.
Is that four pack position as good as people are expecting?
I think so. I don't think you have that one standout player, but you have players that can play multiple roles. Adoree could be a nickel. Logan could be a nickel. I think Malcolm can move inside and be a nickel at that time. LeSean's more of an outside corner, and they all can play outside. Logan probably being more of the inside guy.
You have any doubts this team? I mean, the Malarkey firing press conference was, John said six times in that press conference, he used the word maximize and talked about the failure to maximize the skill. You have any doubt from the outside looking in now with Vrabel and his staff and what you've read and heard that they're going to mix and match, that one Sunday might be a Derrick Henry Sunday and another might be a Deion Lewis one because of matchups, that the corners, like you're talking about, could be completely lined up completely differently one week to the next based on match. This is going to be a matchup-based team now?
I mean, that's what they're saying. And I think the proof's going to be when they play a game. You know, is Derek on the sidelines in certain games and Deion's the guy? Is Deion going to be happy being on the sidelines and Derek's the guy? You know, those personalities come into play in that. Not only does your depth chart affect when you start a game and say, this is what we're going to do, but those personalities are important as well. Who's the team leader on the team? Are you sitting that person on the bench? How does it affect other people in the locker room? That type of thing. So there's so many different things that come into play with just saying, we're going to do it our way this way. It's got to be successful out of the shoot too. I mean, you got a tough four game stretch to start, but there really isn't a growing period now. You went to the playoffs last year. That you got a quarterback that's ready to perform. You got players that are coming toward the end of their career that it's time for them to play and be successful. You know, there's not really a time to sit there and say, well, we got growing pains because we're new. No, we don't. You've got to win now.
Blake, we have an endless amount of topics to hit with you. Unfortunately, we're out of time for the hour. But we hope you'll come back and do this again quickly, because there's a lot of Titans discussion to be had, a lot of stories to be told, and a look around the league that we've yet to do with you in your two visits.
And this is sort of insight people just absolutely thirst for and is rarely available. So we're thankful that you're seeing us as qualified to have you in and handle it. Thanks a lot.
Well, I've always enjoyed coming in. I've always enjoyed seeing everybody out of practice. I used to run from Paul when he was at practice. I didn't really run from Jonathan very much, but ran from Paul. But now it's nice to see these guys in the studio.
They say that I've softened. These guys accuse me of
that. Oh, he's softened quite a bit.
He has. There's no doubt.
The softening continues.
8-year-old boy does that to you.